Chapter 13. Cabrillo needed only a second to devise a plan. There's a window in Kyle's bedroom. The back of this building is closer to the perimeter wall. He led them down the hallway again, flashing his pistol at anyone peering out of his room. The sight of the weapon was more than enough to encourage them to stay inside. Kyle's roommate continued his drug-induced sleep despite the commotion. Juan charged across the room, firing several shots at the large picture window on the far wall. The plastic bullets carried more than enough kick to loosen the glass before he hurtled himself bodily through it. Shards cascaded around him as he rolled onto the dried-out lawn, and he felt a few ripped small cuts in his hands and at the back of his neck. With multiple lights shining from the dorm rooms, he had a clear picture of the cement block wall 15 yards away. The guards continued to concentrate their fire at the entrance and had yet to encircle the building. Glass crunched behind him as Murph, Link, and Eddie stepped through the ruined window. Juan's actions had bought them a few seconds at best. The explosives Eddie had planted were midway down the wall's length, the location chosen because of the cameras rather than it being the best tactical location. To reach it, they would have to cross 100 yards of open ground, a perfect killing field for the responsivist guards. "Linda, give me a sit-rep." Cabrillo needed a clearer overview than the tiny e-paper screen on his wrist. "Is that you who just went through a window?" "Yes. What's the situation?" "There are 3 guards near the dorm's entrance and another dozen or so fanning out across the compound. All are heavily armed, and 2 of them are on 4-wheelers. George is on his way. You should be able to hear the chopper." Juan could hear the drumming of the Robinson's rotor through the evening air. "Tell Max to get moving, too. We might have to use Plan C." "Juan, I'm on the net," Max Hanley said over the radio. "We're underway right now. Do you have Kyle?"
"We do. He's fine for the moment, but we need to get the hell out of here."
"Don't worry. The cavalry's coming."
"That's what they said at Little Bighorn when Custer showed up, and you know how that turned out."
The sound of the approaching helicopter reached a fever pitch, and just before the copter thundered over the wall, Juan nodded to Eddie. There was no need to talk to each other. With Plan A in ruins, they seamlessly switched to Plan B. Eddie had the explosives detonator in his hands. He waited a beat as a guard in a 4-wheel all-terrain vehicle approached the bomb and then casually triggered it. A section of wall erupted in a roiling cloud of white dust and flame. The guard was blown off the 4-wheeler and thrown 20 feet before tumbling to the ground in a loose-limbed roll. His ATV had been flipped onto its side, its balloon tires spinning uselessly. Bits of concrete fell like hail across the compound as the mushroom of dust and fire climbed into the sky. The team took off in a dead sprint, Link easily keeping pace despite the dead weight of Kyle Hanley over his shoulder. When they reached the corner of the building, Juan peered around it. One of the guards who'd first opened fire was down, his face a sheet of blood from a scalp laceration caused by a chunk of cement. He was being tended to by another guard while the third was trying to get the door unstuck. Taking careful aim, Juan cycled through the remaining 4 rounds in his Glock. Knowing their torsos were impervious to the plastic bullets and reluctant to kill the guards outright, he fired 2 low-aimed rounds at each man. The pairs of bullets wouldn't emasculate them, but their groins were going to be swollen for weeks. They went down screaming, clutching themselves in utter agony.
"Sorry, boys."
"Literally," Juan said, and relieved them of their weapons. They carried mini Uzis, which were terrific close-work guns, but useless at any meaningful range. He tossed 1 to Eddie and the other to Link, who was a better shot carrying a man on his shoulder than Murph was at a firing bench with his gun bolted to the table. The Black Robinson R-44 suddenly roared overhead, flying so low that the skids nearly knocked tiles off the roofs. George Adams pirouetted the chopper above the compound, using the rotor's downwash to kick up a sandstorm. The maelstrom of grit served to cover Juan and the others, as well as keep the guards pinned. Amid the deafening throb of the blades beating the air and the chaos all around them, no one knew where a fresh burst of gunfire originated.
A flurry of white spider webs suddenly appeared in the chopper's windshield and the co-pilot's window. Embers of hot metal peeled away from the aircraft's skin as bullets tore through its hull. George ducked and weaved the helo like a prizefighter in the ring, but the stream of tracers continued to pour in until a gush of smoke erupted from the engine cowling. Juan frantically changed frequencies on his radio, shouting, "Get out of there, George! Go! 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 That's an order!"
"I'm out of here. Sorry," Adams drawled.
With that, the chopper turned like a dragonfly and veered back over the wall, trailing smoke that was blacker than the night.
"Now what?" Murph asked the chairman.
75 yards of open ground yawned before them, and already the responsivists were up and getting organized. The corporation team had cover in a shallow drainage ditch, but it wouldn't last long. Already, guards were forming search parties, their flashlights lancing out into the darkness.
"Where are you, Linda?" Cabrillo asked.
"Just outside the wall, not far from where you guys blew it open. Can you reach me?"
"Negative. Too many guards and not enough cover.
I swear this place is more like a military barracks than a wacko retreat."
"Then I guess it's time for a diversion."
"Make it good." Over the radio, he could hear the sound of an engine accelerating, but Linda didn't respond. 30 seconds later, the compound's main gate was torn off its hinges and the back end of the van they had rented burst through, its bumper hanging askew. The dozen or more guards covering the facility turned at once. Some began running toward this latest threat, not noticing the shadows rising out of a culvert and racing for the breach in the wall. Guns opened up on Linda's van, 40 holes appearing in its sheet metal hide before she could wrestle the transmission back into drive. The tires kicked up feathers of gravel before regaining traction, and she drove out of the withering barrage. As they ran for the wall, Juan called to Link and Eddie.
"Switch to Plan C, and I'll see you in a bit."
"Where are you going?" Mark was panting.
Cabrillo thought idly that they really did need to get Murph to the ship's exercise room.
"They got one of Linda's tires. There are jeeps in front of the main building. They'll catch us before we make it a half mile. I'm going to delay them so you can get to the bridge."
"That should be my job," Eddie said.
"Negative. Your responsibility is with Max's son. Good luck."
Juan angled away from the smoking pile of rubble that had once been the wall. The ATV was still on its side, exhaust curling from its tailpipe. He turned to see his men climb through the gap before grabbing the handlebars. He goosed the throttle and worked the wheel, using the four-wheeler's power rather than his strength to right the 600-pound vehicle. It bounced onto its rubbery tires, and he threw his leg over the seat, gunning the motor before he was settled in. The machine's 750cc engine growled as he took off across the lawn. A detachment of guards ran for the open-topped jeeps, while those closest to the wall turned to resume their hunt of Juan's team. Cabrillo maintained the advantage of his night vision goggles, but more lights were being turned on all around the compound. The pole-mounted spots cast blinding pools of incandescence. He had a minute or less before they recognized it wasn't one of their own driving the ATV. He tore around as if searching for the intruders while trying to find a guard farthest from any illumination. He spotted a man taking cover behind one of the desiccated trees near where two of the perimeter walls met. He raced over, pulling off his goggles but pausing in a shadow so his face remained hidden. Not knowing what language the guard spoke, Cabrillo waved him over, indicating he should hop on the back of the big four-wheeler. The guard didn't hesitate. He ran to Juan and jumped onto the seat behind him, bracing himself with one hand on Cabrillo's shoulder while clutching a machine pistol with the other.
"Not your lucky day, pal," Juan muttered, and torqued back on the throttle.
"I've got everybody," Linda Ross called. "We're on the main road now."
Glancing at the jeeps, Juan saw that the first one was ready to head out in pursuit. Apart from the driver and the guard in the passenger seat, there were two other armed men in the back, clinging to the metal roll bar. He knew his people would make a good show of themselves, but they were virtually unarmed, in a van with a flat tire that couldn't do more than 50 miles per hour.
The outcome was inevitable, especially when the other Jeep took off after his team too. It was time to level the playing field. The guard riding the back of Cabrillo's ATV tapped him on the shoulder, pointing that they should head toward the back of the dormitory. Juan seemed to comply, accelerating evenly across the smooth terrain. He could feel the eyes of the other guards watching him, so he waited until the last possible second to crank the handlebars hard to the right. The balloon tires tore furrows out of the ground, and had Juan not thrown his weight in the opposite direction, the four-wheeler would have flipped. Coming back down on four wheels and pointing straight at the breach in the wall, Juan put on the power. He wrenched the guard's mini Uzi from his hands and jammed it into his own belt. The guard was confused for a second, but quickly recovered. He threw his arm around Juan's neck, his ropey bicep crushing Cabrillo's larynx and windpipe with unholy strength. Juan gasped and choked, working his powerful lungs to draw in little sips of air while keeping the ATV accelerating toward the gap. The hole had a ragged 6-foot diameter, and beneath it was a jumbled pile of shattered cement blocks and loose mortar. They were barreling in at 40 miles per hour with less than 15 yards to go when bullets began to strike the wall. The responsivist guards had seen the fleeing vehicle and assumed the two men sitting astride it were the ones who'd infiltrated their lair. Cement chips and dust erupted from the wall as rounds were sprayed at the ATV in a punishing fusillade. Juan could feel the heat of the bullets whizzing all around them. He even felt one graze his artificial leg, but ignored the distraction, keeping his diminishing focus on the hole. His lungs convulsed from lack of oxygen as the guard redoubled his hold, bearing down with every ounce of his strength, trying to choke the life out of his prey. "Come on, you bastards! Shoot straight for once," Juan thought as his peripheral vision vanished into a rapidly expanding darkness, as though he were looking down an ever-lengthening tunnel. "Do it!" Cabrillo knew it could be his last thought on Earth. Then he felt a powerful jolt, as if he'd been sledgehammered in the spine. The guard's tenacious grip came free. He made a gurgling sound as he slumped over the chairman, blood from his ruptured lungs spilling from his mouth. The burst of auto fire from the responsivists had struck their own man. He fell off the back of the quad when Juan hit the base of the pile of debris. The fat tires found easy purchase on the loose rubble. He shot up the incline and through the gap, ducking so as not to tear his head off. He soared out the other side, instinctively rising from the seat just before landing to absorb the shock. The big Kawasaki bounced on its suspension, bucking Cabrillo so he almost flew over the handlebars. His radio earbud popped free and dangled across his chest on its wire. He held on grimly, struggling to refill his lungs through his damaged windpipe. As soon as the ATV settled firmly again, he twisted the handlebars hard over, turning so he could get on the coast road leading to Corinth, 12 miles away. He hit the pavement just as the first Jeep burst through the ruined gate and tore down the road. Linda and the others had maybe a half-mile head start. Not nearly enough. A switch on the handlebars disengaged the ATV's front wheels, giving Juan a burst of speed. He accelerated down the road along the outside of the wall. The gate was 20 yards away when the second Jeep careened through, its tires kicking up dirt before they hit the blacktop. There were only 3 guards in this one, a driver, passenger, and a man standing in the rear clutching an AK-47. Juan had the advantage of momentum and raced up behind the Jeep before they knew he was there. He kicked himself up so he was standing on the saddle seat, the wind stinging his eyes. Slowing only slightly so that he was going just a few miles per hour faster than the Jeep, he crashed the front of the ATV into the Jeep's rear bumper. The impact launched Cabrillo off the Kawasaki, his shoulder slamming the guard standing in the rear. The man's face smashed into the roll bar with teeth splintering force, and he was bent backward until it seemed his heels would touch his head. If the collision hadn't killed the guard, Juan was still certain the man was out of the fight.
Juan untangled himself enough to kick out with his artificial leg, a sweeping arc that caught the guard in the passenger seat on the side of the head. With the jeep's doors removed, there was nothing to keep the man from tumbling out of the vehicle and cartwheeling down the road. Cabrillo had the barrel of the mini Uzi pressed to the driver's head before he was fully conscious of what had happened. "Jump or die. The choice is yours." The driver did neither. He crushed the brake pedal to the floor. The tires lit up as the rear of the jeep nearly lifted free of the road. Juan hit the windshield, folding it flat, and he tumbled across the hood, falling over the front so quickly he didn't have time to grab the grill. As soon as Cabrillo had vanished from sight, the driver released the brake and mashed the accelerator again, knowing the man who'd attacked them was lying helplessly on the road.